All right, so you want the inside scoop on the later Space Odyssey books, huh? Buckle up, because that's exactly what we're diving into today. We're talking 2061 and 3001, those sequels that really take Clark's vision to a whole other
And
level.
you want to know the best part? You get to skip all the reading and just soak up the juicy bits.
Exactly. So if you've seen or read the earlier stuff, you know this saga started way back with The Sentinel, this short story by Clark that basically sparked the whole thing. Then, boom, we got 2001, A Space Odyssey, the book, and that mind-blowing movie by Kubrick.
A true game changer, that one.
Totally.
No.
And then, of course, we had 2010, Odyssey 2, which also became a film, 2010, the year we make contact.
Maybe not as legendary as 2001, but still, it gave us some crucial plot points, like that super intense warning about Europa.
You know, all these worlds are yours, except
Yeah.
Europa. Attempt no landing there. Chills every time.
Right. And then, bam, Jupiter turns into Lucifer, a brand new star in our solar system. Talk about a cosmic plot twist.
Seriously, 2010 really sets the stage for all the wild stuff that happens in 2061.
It totally does.
Yeah.
It's like Clark was dropping hints all along about where this saga was heading.
Okay, so let's jump into 2061, Odyssey 3. It's, well, 2061, and our solar system is a whole new ball game.
Big time.
We meet up with Dr. Heywood Floyd again, you know, from the first books.
Yeah.
He's a whopping 103 years old, but get this, he looks about 65.
Thanks to all those fancy hibernation techniques and the low gravity out in space.
Anti-aging, space
Yes.
style. Anyway, Floyd's living it up in a space hospital when, wham, he gets an invitation he can't refuse. A trip on this super luxurious spaceship, the Universe, going to meet Halley's Comet.
Fancy, right. And this ship isn't just any old hunk of metal. It runs on this thing called a fusion-catalyzed muonic drive. Uses water as fuel.
Clark, that guy, always thinking ahead. And on board, you've got celebrities, commentators, the whole nine yards. It's like space travel's gone mainstream. Well, for the rich and famous, at least.
Yeah, I guess some things never change.
But then things go south fast. The universe gets word that its sister ship, the Galaxy, you know, the one surveying Jupiter's moons, well, it crash landed on Europa.
Big no-no, right? Remember that warning?
Huge no-no. This is only the second time a ship's gone down on Europa. The first one, the Qian, was a Chinese ship on a secret mission to study the monolith. Didn't end well for them.
Nope. It got wiped out by something down there in the ocean under the ice. One of the crew, Dr. Chang, he managed to send a warning before they went kaput.
But that whole part got left out of the 2010 movie, which is kind of a bummer. Anyway, now the galaxy is stuck on Europa. Turns out it wasn't an accident, it was sabotage.
Someone wanted that ship on Europa and they didn't care how they got it there.
Right. The saboteur was a stewardess, Rosie McMahon, but it's not clear why she did it. Some people think she was being controlled, maybe even by the monoliths.
Oh, wow, that's creepy.
Yeah, and it gets worse. She ends up face to face with one of the European sea creatures, and, well, it doesn't end well for her either.
Poor Rosie. Talk about being caught in the middle.
So the universe crew has a tough choice to make. Rescue the galaxy and risk breaking that monolith rule about Europa, or just leave them there.
A real ethical dilemma.
Yeah, and the captain, Smith, he decides they gotta go for it. They swing by Halley's Comet, grab some water from this geyser, and use it as fuel to reach Europa. That maneuver, by the way, makes the universe the most watched object in history.
Wild spectacle.
Meanwhile, the crew on the galaxy is in a fight for their lives. They're dealing with tremors, weird creatures, a total mess.
But hey, at least one guy's happy out. Rolf Vandenberg, this scientist on board, he's like a kid in a candy store with all these discoveries.
And he finds some crazy stuff. Mount Zeus. Turns out it's a giant diamond.
A diamond mountain, that's nuts.
I know. And he also stumbles upon the wreck of the Seine and finds evidence of European life, like actual murals they created.
Aliens with an artistic side, who knew?
Right. And then we've got Heywood's grandson, Chris. He takes a shuttle down to check out what looks like an abandoned city on Europa.
Hold on, this is where things get really strange.
Right. He starts seeing things, maybe hallucinations. He thinks he sees Heywood or even Dave Bowman, the guy from 2001.
The monoliths are messing with his head.
Exactly. And that's how 2061 ends. A whole bunch of unanswered questions.
Well.
What happens to the galaxy crew? What are those Europa creatures really like? And what's going to happen to Floyd? It keeps you on the edge of your seat, right?
It totally does. What I find amazing is how spot on Clark was with some of his predictions. Like, hibernation tech. We're actually getting close to that.
Yeah. NASA's doing research on the International Space Station, figuring out how space affects aging. Not quite hibernation yet, but hey, it's a start.
And remember the muonic drive, that crazy engine the universe used? Scientists at CERN are actually messing around with muons for space travel.
No way! And space tourism. Back then, it was pure science fiction. Now we've got Virgin Galactic launching people into space.
Oh, a hefty price tag.
Of course, for a hefty price tag. And the whole space exploration scene has exploded. Companies like SpaceX are launching rockets left and right.
Plus, we know now that Europa really is an ocean world under the ice, just like Clark described.
Remember back in 2022 when NASA confirmed those water vapor plumes on Europa? That was huge.
Huge. And even the idea of Jupiter turning into a star, it kind of lines up with scientists looking for life on those Jovian moons.
The James Webb Telescope even found organic molecules on Europa. It's almost eerie how accurate Clark was.
Eerie, yeah. And he also had this vision of humanity coming together through space exploration, kind of like what's happening with the Artemis Accords, right?
Totally. So many countries working together to get back to the moon.
It's kind of beautiful, you know, this idea that exploring space could actually bring us all closer together.
Okay, ready to tackle 3001, The Final Odyssey. This is the book that wraps up the whole saga.
Bring it on.
So it starts off with a real shocker. They find Frank Poole.
Wait. Frank Poole, the guy from 2001?
The one and only. Apparently, he was floating out in space all this time, perfectly preserved, and 1,000 years later, some cargo ship finds him.
1,000 years?
Yeah.
And they bring him back to life.
Yeah, they use this super advanced cryogenic tech to thaw him out. Can you imagine waking up in a world 1,000 years in the future?
I talk about culture shock.
No kidding. And the world of 3001 is like something out of a sci-fi dream. They've got these massive orbital towers reaching into space, floating cities in Jupiter's atmosphere, and people living on asteroids. They even have artificial gravity.
Sounds pretty amazing.
It is. And everyone's got brain implants to share knowledge instantly. It's like being connected to the internet 24/7.
Whoa. But I guess there's got to be a catch, right?
There is. Dave Bowman, you know, he merged with the monolith, right? Well, he and HAL 9000, they contact Poole with a pretty dire message. The monoliths have decided humanity's got to go.
What? Why?
Because we're too violent, too destructive. They see us as a threat to their little experiment on Europa.
Oh, man. Talk about a cosmic eviction notice.
Right. And they're planning to wipe us out with this thing they call a cosmic virus. It's not a disease, more like a weaponized signal or something.
So what do they do?
Poole, Bowman, and HAL team up to try and stop it. Talk about an unlikely trio.
They got to use HAL's digital brain and Bowman's link to the monolith network to somehow disrupt the signal. It's like a cosmic cyber war.
Exactly, and they pull it off. But it's a close call, and both Bowman and HAL have to sacrifice themselves to rewrite the monolith programming and give humanity another shot.
Wow. So we're on probation then.
Basically. And we also finally find out what happened to Chris Floyd from 2061. Remember, he died on Europa? Turns out the monolith killed him.
No way.
Yeah. Poole finds records that confirm it. They were protecting the European life, making sure we kept our hands off.
Yeah, it's like a huge cosmic reminder. Stay away from Europa.
Precisely. So we've got this awesome saga, but no movies for 2061 or 3001. Why do you think that is?
Well, first off, you can't just replace Kubrick. He was the mastermind behind 2001. And when he passed away, that vision went with him.
Makes sense. And 2010 didn't do as well as 2001, so maybe Hollywood figured people weren't interested anymore.
Plus, those film rights got super messy after Kubrick died. It was a legal nightmare.
Right, and no big shot directors were jumping at the chance to adapt to the later books.
Maybe they thought the stories weren't cinematic enough. 2061 focuses a lot on the Europa landing, more sciencey stuff, less action.
Mm.
And 3001 is almost like a philosophy lecture with spaceships.
It's a lot of thinking, not a lot of explosions.
Exactly. Totally different vibe from the mystery of 2001 or the Cold War tension in 2010.
But who knows? Maybe if they tried to make those movies today, they'd be a hit. Huh. We're more into those mind-bending sci-fi flicks now, like Arrival, you know.
Right, or Ad Astra, those films really make you think.
And speaking of new adaptations, there's talk of a 2001 TV series produced by Amazon.
They snagged the rights, working with Kubrick's family and Clark's estate to make it happen.
And rumor has it Jonathan Nolan might be involved.
Whoa, if that's true, this could be epic.
It could be. Okay, before we wrap up, let's talk about the big picture, the themes that run through the whole Space Odyssey saga. What stands out to you?
It's all about evolution, isn't it? The idea that we're not just traveling through space, but evolving as a species.
Right. And the monoliths are like these cosmic guides, pushing us along, sometimes judging us, showing us that we're not alone in the universe.
And that the universe is a pretty mind-boggling place, with forces we can barely comprehend.
And that's the beauty of it, right? The mystery, the unknown.
Totally. And even though they stopped that cosmic virus in 3001, it's still a fragile piece. Like, what happens next? Do we mess things up again?
What if our curiosity gets the better of us and we can't resist exploring further? What if there are other rules out there, rules we don't even know about yet?
That's the question, isn't it? Are we brave explorers or just cosmic troublemakers? Makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does. And that's what great sci-fi does best. It leaves you with more questions than answers, pushing you to think beyond the boundaries of what you thought you knew.
So what do you think, listeners? Are we ready for the next chapter of the Odyssey?
Only time will tell.
And that's a wrap.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the Space Odyssey saga. It's been a blast exploring these mind-bending ideas with you. Until next time, keep looking up.
And keep wondering.